night.
Any similar ideas?
On profiling?
I printed all the papers in my back. That means there's something I'll read it. but are there sort of a similar...
So the guy who did the birds of feather session, he had two papers. And did you get a chance to read the papers?
Not yet.
One of the papers talks about using different file systems and different I/O schedulers on two different SSDs, and basically this reports the performance of the report. This is the one enabling enterprise solid state disk performance.
Yep.
Basically, it's the same set of authors, and they have two different papers. And I think the earlier one is the other one, which is comparing performance of solid-state devices and mechanical disk drives. And basically, here they just look at, I don't know if they do the same sort of experiments.
Do you know when they're published?
So these are, I think both of them are some workshops. First is a workshop on PAL PDSI workshop. This is basically some center that was created by the DOE labs and UC Santa Cruz, CMU. These guys are all involved, and they have a yearly workshop on. It's all about storage. So this comparing between disk and solid state was published there. And then the second paper was published in WISH 2009, which I think we looked at the call for papers for that workshop.
So who's the, I don't know these people, which one is.
So actually, Milo is a student of Garth Gibson, who is a professor at CMU. And he's also the CTO and co-founder of Panasis, which is a storage company that they basically sell a lot of storage to, primarily the DOE labs. They have also, they basically sell entire solutions. They also have their own parallel file system implementation called PANFS or something like that. And they have their own, they build their own boxes as well. And yeah, so this guy is, Scott Gibson is very active in the storage field. But, I mean, having looked at these papers, they have a different approach than what we have. And their goal is to understand SSDs at a more, at a more black box level by running different sorts of workloads and choosing different configuration parameters in the operating system. So one thing that they do is vary the I/O scheduler. The other thing that they do is they vary the file system. So they vary the file system across, I think, three or four different types of file systems, and the same with I/O schedulers. And look at all these combinations. See, well, which gives you the best?
But they don't really provide any insights.
They do, so they do talk a little bit about what's maybe going on inside, but it's very high level, I would say. I think our work is at a different level of abstraction, at a completely different level of abstraction. But having said that, there's this other paper that's going to come out in Sigmetrix, which should be paying close attention to see what they have.
We don't know anything about it.
I haven't been checking recently.
I think they send out acceptance, right? If that doesn't
change, so because
we could actually try to Google the authors trying to just get the papers right after this.
So that's the. I think we are still okay from our work standpoint,
not for long.
which might not be true for long.
So
let's talk about what we've been doing. So Ariel, you sent out the model, which
some thoughts. Not really.
Yeah, not the model, but basically just some ideas behind how we can construct the model possibly.
Right. So one thing I wanted to discuss from last meeting that we just didn't have the time was about the parallel recommend.
Yes.
For the idea we discussed offline and how to implement them. And perhaps it's worth mentioning that I didn't get the intended curve.
Mm.
Or in other words, this change did not produce the...
So you didn't get the spikes at the right place?
No. Those were smoother. It's like, we're not really tight back, but like it was different change like...
But there were there any changes in the...
There were some changes, but slight changes, but not really dramatic ones. It was just like as incorporating one more level of parallelism, but kind of half level of parallelism, which is what, unless there's some bug in my code, if there's some problem with the code.
Or it could be just a matter of changing some of the values of the parameters, because if you do see a bump, which means that the bump, there is a cause for that bump, which is connected to a certain parameter. And changing that parameter might change the characteristics of your model.
Right. Might have to do as well with the type of implementation of this. So we discussed about, say, when we have a request that's aligned perfectly between two units that are consecutive within a, say, a, the same level, which are siblings, basically, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we execute this in parallel. But if, let's say, if the request exceeds for with some extra bytes, I still execute this parallel command and these extra bytes are go sequentially. So maybe that's a mistake and we only need to consider when we have the perfect alignment. You can follow what I mean by that?
Sort of. So you're saying that if I have a wraparound,
mm-hmm.
and then because there are two areas of that I request that need to be serialized, you issue them in sequence. Which would be the right thing to do, right?
We don't know really if that's the way the SSD preserves. A request that spans more than one, let's say,
page,
but at the same time, I mean, two units that could potentially be issued in parallel. So maybe
are you talking about the read?
Maybe we should do this offline.
Yeah,
I think it's
so.
Better that we talk about this offline.
Yeah, we're
digressing,
I think.
Yeah, so let's talk about other things first. So Louis, what do you have to discuss?
Yeah. Well, I guess the only thing I have so far is the experiments I did with rights. So. I don't have much to talk about, just some results and the one that I sent. So I guess to sum up.
I'm sorry, did you send some results?
No. Just one graph that I sent like 2 weeks ago. That was 4K requests writing to the same block repeatedly, like for 100,000 times.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right?
Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
So there was some kind of pattern there, actually. And so I have that. At the end, I was doing this experiment for the rest of the devices,
mm-hmm.
and with varying the request size just to see the results. And I decided to instead of having 100,000 requests, I decided to make it 10,000 because I was thinking about this square leveling and the maximum number of cycles, so I thought I can break the SSD right somehow. But well, anyway, so I decided to make it 10,000 instead, and I have three things to say. So the first one is that apparently if you repeat exactly the same experiment, you have mostly the same graph. So, I mean, what I mean by mostly is that almost, and actually, it's very stable in the milliseconds that it it left, right, the request takes to be done. So there are some outliers, but you know, there are very, very few outliers. But most of the requests are within the same line.
So when you repeat, I'm sorry, when you repeat the experiment, do you do it back to back or you have a delay?
I think I have some graph. No, I have some delay.
Okay,
because
so
I do 10,000,
okay,
right? I wait for some time, well, at least while I move the data, you know, to the results.
So it might be a few minutes, maybe?
Yeah, probably two minutes, let's say. No more than that. And they look very similar, very similar. The other thing is that I did...
Now, when you say they look similar, are they all similar across all the devices?
No, I'm talking about just the same device.
Which
in this case,
Memory.
I'm doing this in Memory mostly. Okay. I have also results for Samsung, but Memory is the one that I'm doing most.
What does that mean? I mean, it's the... say it doesn't matter? So maybe it's the write is actually sort of erase kind of operations in the background?
Now the curve that you got, does it for all the requests that you issue, it's all exactly the same performance?
It's exactly the same. But I'm talking about...
Even in the beginning parts of the experiment? The beginning parts of the experiment, do you see any better performance and then it becomes stable?
Like the first two requests, you say? Or?
Yeah, first few requests, whatever you need to put.
No, I don't know. I haven't checked that.
So in the graph, do you make out any anomalies in the beginning part of the...
No, it doesn't look like...
So you look at one of these papers, they have a random write experiment where they write to different blocks on the SSD, and what they find is that in the beginning the performance is really good, and after they reach 100 seconds
mm-hmm.
into the experiment,
100 seconds, okay,
doing 4K random writes, then the performance drops sharply. Can I see the?
Can you open URL?
Oh, yeah.
You can see the browser here.
The mouse. You can see this guy. So it's this one here. So they are looking at I/O operations per second as throughput,
right?
And for two different devices, I think one of them is Fusion I/O, and the other one is
which paper?
One is enabling enterprise solid state. They don't write the name of the device.
Okay.
I think they want to
maybe this one. Is this one of the which speaker are we talking about?
Here's one is the Fusion I/O and the other is Intel, because I remember from the presentation, but it's not in the paper.
Fusion I/O and the RS Intel.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I think the reason they didn't put it is because they don't want to make bad relationship or
mm-hmm.
so maybe they didn't get permission from the vendor to.
What is the graph?
This graph. Yeah. I wish you had come to the SSD bomb because it was very.
If we find that curve that doesn't look really nice,
but
can we
end our spatial results? Saying this is a device A, device B, or
yeah, you
or
can.
Anything, right?
Well, it depends on the conference. So if sometimes I remember this time in FAST there was a paper which had a lot of anonymization in the results, and then we had to go back and forth with the. We wanted to accept the paper, but then the problem was with some of the basic things like units. Okay, they anonymized the units also. So we say, okay, well, although you don't want to tell us
right.
the number, can you tell us what units these are in or some, maybe not the units, I think there was something else. So then Margo, who's the program chair, contacted the author and said that we will publish your paper if you can provide these details. The others are okay, we are okay with that being anonymous.
And why they decided to make it anonymous?
Yeah.
for because they were reporting some customer numbers, and they didn't want to make their customers' information public.
Oh, okay.
That sort of stuff.
So the paper was from people from the vendor.
Not from vendor. In this case, it was from some company, and this company had data about systems that were deployed in some other company, and they were using statistics that were collected in those deployed systems,
and maybe with some.
So in any case, so it depends on the conference, and sometimes the program chair will just say, well, we cannot even review this paper because it has some key details that are missing. Other times they say, well, it's okay. As long as we have enough information to learn something from the paper, it's good enough.
No, I guess, you know, just from the standpoint of, our case, we're not actually getting any sponsorship from the vendor, and we're not getting any details, for the insider information. If we are getting insider information, then the leverage, our funding, we have to be very careful not to really think of the whoever's sponsor. But this time, just anybody can pick up the disk and be able to do exactly the same thing.
So we don't have any of the optimization issues. Maybe they did because they got the devices from these vendors and the vendors, and they did not want to make that vendor information public. What I was showing to you is this thing, which is they did a random write experiment. They're writing to random locations, and then initially, and this device, which is the Fusion IO device, also reports, interestingly, the number of clean blocks inside the device. So you can query the device for the number of clean blocks.
Okay, sure.
So that's this curve here.
How do you clean?
It's a
gray curve.
What?
How do you clean? What do you mean by that?
No,
You can query the
the interface provide that.
Yeah, because that interface is not CLTA, but PCI Express.
So they actually queried the device with this experiment, and they saw that, well, initially you have really good performance, 35,000 IO ops. So if you convert that to 4K, that's times 4, that's 120 megabytes per second, right? 140 megabytes per second you have up here, and then you start, after some 100 seconds or something, you start. Actually, even before that, 50 seconds maybe, you see a sharp drop. And then you go down to a level which is more like 20 megabytes per second of random writing.
If they disable buffer write or...
Write buffer. I don't think it matters because it's random writes.
So this is basically saying something about the backlog, right? So it's just a matter of... I believe these free erase blocks are constantly changing, I guess, to some extent. And because of this experiment, Intuit start to,
reduce
a lot of free blocks. And it's getting at a critical level. It actually starts to interfere with the foreground at all.
That's exactly right. So because for future writes, there is a statement here where they say that for future writes, you have to wait for a synchronous clean operation before that write can actually go to medium.
That's good. Yeah.
So that's why you see the...
It would be interesting if they do exactly the same, but always write into the same block and see these dots go in, right? To see what happens when you... Or any device, but if you can have this information on the number of clean blocks, that would be interesting, right? Because if you write always the same block, how does that affect the number of clean blocks across all the
Luis, I remember that in your plot, once in a while, you show something sharp drop and increase. That's a different thing, right? That's not over time, right? That's
what plot was that?
I think you were writing experiments, if I remember correctly.
I remember. In that case, the x-axis was request size.
That's of size, right? So that's not.
Yeah.
But you are doing this in one experiment, right?
Right.
So So you're not really sort of breaking into it. You could have actually got into one of those areas, like just what they did. It's not like that.
May not be dependent on the request size, actually.
Right, yeah.
It may just be because you did the experiment. You started with a small request, during which you had lots of clean blocks, and then as you went into the experiment, you ran out of clean blocks.
And your
and
group
you start
dropping.
It may not be related to the request size at all. It just
right.
be because of the state of the disk.
Right.
Right. So in any case, I mean, this is what they have. I mean, with random writes, they see a drop.
So do write profile is extremely important that we don't sort of petrol the request to some extent, right? So if you do say, I want to go with this size and start to issue requests, it's worthwhile to wait, you know, if we're not trying to test this behavior, trying to sort of get rid of this particular bad thing, which we don't really have much of a control. And what we need to do is basically have to space the request, right? Or so that it can be independent to some extent. So
right.
No, but the thing is that there is a threshold-based cleaning, right? As you can see here, at least in the initial part, the system was stable only when the number of clean blocks get to a certain point, I think they start actually doing the cleaning. So if you look at that graph, so here you see that actually there is a drop. There is
drop,
the number of clean blocks starts decreasing right away.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So you see this line down here. And then when it hits a certain low value, that's when your throughput goes down. Right?
And keeps constant. After that, so that means that you cannot have less than that number of clean blocks.
Clean blocks, and you have to wait for synchronous.
And so, one interesting question is there a way to have the device to have this number of clean blocks again? If you stop doing writes, right?
Yeah, so it would be good to have them show, okay, they stopped doing the write.
Exactly.
And then
see
what
that,
happened
that,
to the number of clean blocks.
Exactly.
That would be really interesting. They didn't do that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So they're not event-driven, right? They have a controller. They have a processor, right? Doing independent things. Am I right on that part? I mean, basically, you have a controller. Basically, they have the factory CPU, more or less. So if you sort of, I will request coming this side.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a controller. I'm going to satisfy the request by writing to the clean blocks. And suddenly I find my free block is actually below a threshold, and I ignore the request, and I start to do cleaning, right? It's because that's, you know, otherwise I run out of pages, right? And I do this at the same time. So if I don't have a request coming from the other hand, I'm still doing clean, right?
That's what we don't know. That's what because this experiment does not show us that what happens if you stop the number of stop requests from coming to the SSD. Does the SSD continue cleaning and go back to the level where it started with the clean blocks? That would be interesting to see. I mean, we don't have the Fusion IO device, so we cannot query the device. But
we don't care though.
But
we could look at that from the performance.
Yeah, we could. Yeah, exactly. So we know that the performance is going to be different if the number of clean blocks is at a certain level.
Yeah, but that will also depend on the device cleaning policy, right? So we don't really know what's going on.
Yeah, but I think what Jason is trying to say is that how do we determine what is the device cleaning policy?
Oh, I see.
By actually looking at performance. So if we do an experiment like this, we don't have a way to measure the number of clean blocks, but we could do exactly the same experiment, and after a while we stop writing, and then after a delay we start the same experiment again. What kind of performance we get.
Exactly.
Okay.
That will inform us what sort of cleaning policy is being employed.
Makes sense.
Also, so if we do this carefully, it can also actually tell us how much we pay.
Mm-hmm. How much time it takes to do cleaning?
Right. Yeah. So basically, sort of, want to find the function of the function of the pressure.
Yeah.
How much pressure it has the other side, what the response is.
Yeah.
Sorry.
You mean how much time does it take to go back to the previous level of clean loss?
Right. Yeah.
I think that the answer to that may be a bit more complex because it depends on how the nature of the dirtiness of the individual blocks. Because if you have blocks with very little valid data versus a lot of valid data, then the cleaning overheads could be quite different.
Right. I guess go back to our previous discussion. So we talk about the sort of the dirtiness of the state of the disk. So we need to sort of figure out what exactly constitutes the state of the disk. And the state could be the number of I/O requests issued. You know, we think about the variables, we think about the state not from, you know, how many clean blocks or what are, you know, exact, you know, the snapshot of, you know, where they are at the point, but rather coming from the perspective of what are the I/O requests, what are the mixing of the I/O request sizes, or maybe what are the mixing of write locations that actually could trigger, you know, new page requests.
Mm-hmm.
And coming from that angle, and saying if you maintain a stream of I/O requests that, you know, with this type of mixing, with this request I/O request rate, this is the depletion rate of the pages. And it's sort of rather looking at very specific, rather than looking at very aggregate, and sort of provide some kind of response.
I mean, even if we can get to that, I think that's still an achievement. If we can say something about aggregate level performance,
but this is interesting because now we have more variables right now, right? We have one variable which we request as, which is the only variable we use, almost the only variable we use for read, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's some alignment issues, but you know, that's probably what we try to accomplish. And but now we have more variables. Variables pertaining to, you know, the rate that, you know, come in, and the private variables that are about, you know, the dirtiness, or, you know, we have to use another word. You know, how many sort of miscellaneous cleanup operations that will be triggered by that sort of request, so on and so forth, and consider those, you know, our extraction.
I think one of the parameters that Ariel has in his model is the percentage of clean or how dirty the block is. You already have that in part of your write-up, which is the number of valid pages divided by the total size of the block in the
total number of pages
in the block.
Right.
And
actually, I was including that new that last attribute because what I only consider is the percentage of used pages. So those used pages may be clean or maybe invalid pages and valid pages.
Right.
So that's part of use.
Yeah.
That we can even further discriminate within that, those only that are valid.
Yeah, because the cleaning, the way it would happen is that you need to pull out all the valid data, write it to a new block,
right?
And then you have this burst of voltage that will erase the block out, right?
Mm-hmm.
So so there are two parts. One is this burst of voltage, which is fixed, that you have to do that anyway, but the other part, which is how much data do you have to pull out of the block before you can, you know, clean the block, which is variable and depends on how many clean blocks or how many valid pages you have in the block.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to write out those valid pages also. Because reading is probably a smaller cost than writing those out, which we know is more expensive.
So just one thought out of this. In the end, the model is more or less like a queuing model because you have I/O's queuing on the other hand, and the service rate is going to change because you probably have to share that processing with the background.
Mm.
So if you chip that in, if you actually come up with a model, it's going to be something like a queuing model or from that kind of model that's doing this.
Makes sense, actually.
Because otherwise you won't be able to quantify. Obviously, there's a rate, there's a request size, there is per request kind of, the cost of the clean operations per request that will entail. And if you put all these things together, And suppose we can actually quantify that. Suppose that if you have a request this size, suddenly it's spread across some kind of, because of the logical mapping, it's spread across several planes, blocks, and it costs the block to be, these several blocks would be affected, they become a little bit dirtier than before, and they contribute to, the final, sort of they add the values to the final cleanup, and so we have to amortize that, after many requests come in, that will trigger something. So
I think we can actually, that's great. I think the queuing thing seems certainly makes sense, and I think to complement that, we could also have this model of how much the cleaning cost would be on an average, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which depends on actually past requests. If you do a lot of random requests, mm-hmm. the cleaning costs are going to be higher because mm-hmm. on an average you'll have fewer valid blocks, valid pages per block, because all these writes are going to be possibly different.
Actually, I guess it doesn't depend on the number of writes you have, right? But rather, I would say how fragmented is the write? Because if you have, my point is that if you have a write to a complete block, then your cleaning would be zero, right? Your cleaning cost.
No, it's never zero because you still have to erase the block. I do agree. I mean, and that's exactly what I wanted to say, is that you want to look at the randomness of the writes.
Mm-hmm. Right?
So if you have more random writes, your cleaning cost would be higher because you will have fewer number of valid pages per block. And so there is, with cleaning, you have two different costs, actually two different components.
Oh, fine. More of the
So you have two different components of the cleaning cost, right? The first is the data movement.
Okay.
And the second is the erase.
Right.
These are the two components. The data movement is
a clean. You're talking about the cleaning part. Just the cleaning.
Yeah, just the cleaning. Yeah. The data movement is proportional to the number of the cost of data movement. Number of
clean
valid or pages per block.
In LFS, they call it live data.
Live data. Yes. And erase is actually equal to constant.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so one thing which we can do is model the cleaning then by simply modeling this guy.
Mm-hmm.
Because everything else is either constant or predictable based on that value.
There is perhaps a hidden cost over here.
Mm-hmm.
When you move something, you have to select a candidate block, right, to write into. So you read your valid pages and you write somewhere else, but that somewhere else may be as well 30.
No, well, so here there is an underlying assumption that there is always some clean block
uh-huh.
that you can write to, because otherwise you have this cascading cleaning problem.
You may have that, especially when you are reaching the capacity of the device, right? So, and that's one of the points in this document I was reading, which tightly relates the endurance of the SSD to the capacity. And the bigger, the fuller the device is, the more expensive this kind of cleaning is going to be because of that kind of recursive call with the races allocating.
I see that, which does not hold for this guy because for this Fusion IO, because it always maintains a certain number of free clean blocks at any given time. If it goes beyond that value, it's going to stop doing any further records are cleaning.
There's one contribution to that.
I guess even in this case, that cost actually holds, right? Because the thing is that if you have to do a write, you have to wait for some other block to be cleaned.
Mm.
right, to maintain this number of cleaning blocks.
Sure.
So that would make the cleaning cost higher in that case, right?
I don't understand. Why would it be higher? If I have a clean block to write into, I don't have the cascading cleaning problem. So I move the data out, I write to a clean block, and then I erase the block.
Here's another idea that would explain why you have like this time a minimum number of blocks or three, let's say, clean blocks in that curve, right, which is constant, seems to be constant after some time. There's a concept of over provisioning.
Hmm.
So from your set of blocks, you don't allocate all of them.
Right.
You always report free space to the end user, something a little bit less than the full capacity of the SSD. So you always have this pool of blocks that are free that are not reported to the end user, right? But, and that, I guess, is the minimum that you see in the curve.
Yeah. And interestingly, this reminds me of another thing that I was talking to Yuri Schindler from Network Appliance, who's actually made us a committee as well. And so he was telling me that they are also working with this. So everyone is working with SSD, right? And they say that they're doing some profiling work also, but they're more interested in this other project of integrating disk in SSD. So he said that we worked with this SSD, and we used it for a while, and its its advertised capacity was something like, he said 70-something gigabytes, and then they're using it for a while, and then something is a problem with that SSD, so they return it back to the manufacturer. The manufacturer refurbishes the SSD, returns back to them exactly the same SSD, but now it has 60 gigabytes of usable capacity.
Okay.
So they reduced the number?
I don't know what they did, but basically, I think what they're doing was they figured out that some of the blocks are unusable, and we still need over provisioning so that the SSD lasts longer, and that's why they made lesser available capacity visible to the operating system. So there is certainly over-provisioning. That is, a basic requirement for SSD technology.
In order not to have dramatic degradation, one should reach the point where there's no clean block at all.
Right, exactly.
So this, the case that I was talking about, recursive cost, may not really happen.
May not really happen. In case the SSDs have a design where they maintain a minimum number of clean blocks at any time, and if it goes beyond that value, it's going to do something like this. It can start cleaning and affect foreground performance.
And you will identify that if there's kind of constant IOPS or throughput after some time,
right.
And you don't go beyond that. Right,
precisely. Yeah, so then what I'm claiming is that maybe we can model the cleaning cost with the number of valid pages per block, which in turn, we can model by the randomness of the write words. So I'm not exactly sure how this can be done, but I would like someone to think about this more.
We can sort of profile. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was thinking that in the end, it's going to be a model. I mean, if we ignore the queuing factor, that means that we don't make that happen. So we can actually very generally sort of design experiments, pacing out the requests, mm-hmm. so that we don't really cost those sort of things.
Mm-hmm.
However, those things need to be sort of addressed. But we use some careful design experiments to take care of other factors like size and sort of things. And then we come back to this and we say, well, now we need to sort of have a queue model. So that means if we have a queue model, on one side there is going to be the sort of the stream of requests that are coming in. On the other hand, you're going to do, you're going to satisfy the request using whatever the delays that copying all those costs.
Mm-hmm.
And once in a while, one request will only occur cleaning. But at that particular moment, we need to know what the cleaning would be because you have to chip in that into the model. So that
I actually see this as maybe differently, as an alternative to the cleaning, maybe an addition to, but I was thinking, we could have a more coarse-grained model than the queuing model, where we just say, well, we model, for instance, the randomness of write operations. And given just some percentage value, say, well, there is a certain percentage of sequentiality, and therefore a certain percentage of randomness, and given the certain percentage of randomness, I can track the number of valid pages per block. Now that connection I haven't really thought about deeply yet, but I think that there is a connection to be made between the randomness in the workload and this metric. And from here we can go to something called the cleaning cost. But from cleaning cost, we had to go back and say, how does the cleaning cost affect write performance of the foreground workload? Because the foreground workload then, you can say,
that's exactly the time when you're going to have
to use some queuing maybe?
No, well, at least we need to consider the timing.
Right. So this, when I say cleaning cost, I mean more like cleaning time, right? So then my latency for a write latency is going to be a regular write latency.
Mm-hmm.
Plus
the cleaning cost.
Some cleaning time. Now, this is going to also depend on the state of the device.
Mm-hmm.
This depends, whether I incur cleaning time depends on how many clean blocks there are in the system.
But, you know, I guess the cleaning time is variable, it's not constant, right? And that's the part that...
Yeah, so the cleaning time depends on the number of valid pages per block.
Right.
On an average. And then, of course, you do not have an exact, because this is an average value, this is also an average value. And therefore, this is an estimate.
I think we can view this system maybe simply as a two-state. If you know, just judging from that cliff, I mean, even though you're up there, you're down there, right? So basically, there is a transition and you can defeat. So we can actually, from the I/O request stream, to be able to sort of detect what the frequency of those depletion operations occur.
Mm-hmm.
You know, by basically, you know, analyzing how fast that cleaning operation will be able to catch up with the request, or maybe the I/O request overrun the cleaning, and at a certain point, it's going to deplete. That time. However, it's a little bit difficult to quantify. But suppose we can determine that to some degree. We can say, if that happens, it just basically times one in the clean time.
Clean time.
That's the entire clean time for that particular for that particular write request that needed to accomplish.
So you're saying that cleaning time can be zero?
Or
one?
Yeah.
Okay.
So one means
which is a maximum possible cleaning
time. And that will do away with the
tracking the state.
Yeah, tracking the state. As long as we can know the frequency of these things that happen by just analyzing the code request time series.
It would also be good to have an estimate for how much this variability can be. So if my erase time is, there is a certain amount of, so to erase the bits of a block, there is you have to apply voltage. I was reading about this MOSFET technology for a certain period of time. So you apply this burst of voltage and you clear away the bits. So there is a certain amount of duration for that erase operation. So that's the fixed part here, right? And then we can, of course, if we know how much that time is, then we can also see how much this variability because of data movement would be. So if let's say my block is 128 kilobytes, let's just pick this number, and if I need to move all the data out, so read and write of each page, and we know the cost of each page read and page write, so we can come up with the worst case cleaning cost. We can come up with the best case cleaning cost, which is just the erase operation. That is what when you would have with a switch merge. Right? When you have a switch merge, you can only indirect the pointers and erase the block. So that would be the least cleaning time. And in the worst case cleaning time, you have to move all the data out. You do not ever have to move all the data out, which means you have all valid pages in the block. If you have all valid pages in the block, it should not be a candidate for cleaning.
Well, the assumption is that you are modifying one page within that set of clean valid pages.
Right.
Randomly.
So if you have all valid pages in the block, you cannot clean it.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot erase it. There's no point erasing that block. So there has to be at least one invalid page in the block for it to be considered as a candidate for cleaning, because you can save one page. On an average, you probably have blocks that have at most half valid pages and half invalid pages, right? And even better, you have fewer than half valid pages and mostly invalid pages. Those are the best candidates for cleaning, because you have to copy or data move the smallest amount of possible bytes out of the block before you can erase it. So even cleaning and the choice of candidate blocks, would, I'm sure the FTL is going to be looking at how many valid pages there are in the block.
Mm-hmm.
Then choose the one which has the least number of valid pages.
Right. I was thinking in a scenario where all the blocks are fully used.
Mm-hmm.
Say we write and the SSD in its capacity. And then you each run and write.
When you say fully used, you mean all filled with valid pages?
All filled with valid pages.
Okay.
Right, you can say sequentially write from LBA0 till its last one.
Sure.
And then you issue a random writing request. So what's going to happen then? So
you remember that since the SSD is going to export only a subset of the blocks, there are still some few blocks in the background.
There are some few blocks. That's something we agree.
Okay.
But then, okay, so this page is going to be written in one clean block and that's it? Or?
That's it. So now, if that writing to that clean block reduces the number of clean blocks below the threshold, then you might start thinking about cleaning something. To maintain the same level of clean blocks.
I have a question. So if your disk is not accepting any I/O request at the moment,
mm-hmm.
is the I/O controller, I mean, not the I/O controller, the controller inside the SSD is going to do some kind of cleanup operations by itself, just make the state better and say there are...
I would expect the SSD to do that.
Right?
That's the experiment that we wanted to see with this guy, right?
No.
Is that if you stop writing, then does the SSD revert back the number of clean blocks to the previous value?
Not just reversing the clean blocks, but also sort of maybe
doing more cleaning.
Yeah, it's like doing defragmentation that on the background something, and just saying that I see half of the block here, half of the block there. I just sort of self-initiated some kind of cleanup operation just to just in case it makes things better. Is that going to be involved in this? The time, the state is going to change.
Mm.
If we're not doing anything, it's just by itself, it's actually doing something.
I think we can use this experiment with, or maybe even this, I don't know if we're going to get any part with the sequential writes, but with the random writes, we can certainly explore all these different questions and say, okay, let's start with a random write experiment in exactly the same way as these guys, measure the IO ops or throughput, whatever you want to, and then you stop writing, and then start writing after a certain delay, as you can vary this delay, and then start writing randomly again to see, okay, what kind of performance do I get? Do I go back to my original performance, or do I go back to some intermediate level of performance? Then I wait for longer. One thing which might happen is that, for instance, if you do the same graph, maybe you should probably have the same kind of performance, and then, so this is throughput, right? So you go back to some level, then you stop, right? So at this point, you stop issuing IO requests, and then you issue with a delay, and after this delay, several things can happen. You can continue along this path, right? Or you can continue above a little bit because there are fewer king blocks. Or you can go back to your original state. And then even if you go back to the original state, that several things can happen. You remain in that state for a long period of time and then start dropping. Or you remain there for some period of time and then start dropping, right? These are all the questions that we can explore based on this sort of experiment.
So let me ask you do this analysis for your SSD here about this experiment. It's random write, right? They run right up the same size, or run right up
of this these guys' experiments,
right? Yeah.
Not our experiments,
right?
Or we have not done that.
Right, yeah. I would talk about their experiments. So run right up the same
size. They're using 4K.
And they issue it, issue the IO request with some kind of counter.
No, I think they issue back to back.
Okay. Basically.
But in a synchronous manner, right?
I think so, but I haven't had to read all these things. I think it's synchronous. Maybe.
So what you do, you issue the request, you keep going, you measure the delay, just like what you did.
Oh, it says, we configured FIO benchmark to run 4 threads, each writing randomly in 4 kilobyte requests across the entire address space. So there are at any given time, 4 IO requests outstanding at the SSD.
Okay.
And both of these devices have command queuing enabled, the Intel as well as the PCIe.
Okay.
How do you even do that? I thought you can issue simultaneously, they issue multiple across there.
These are the high-end devices that they're experimenting with. And the new Intel, it supports 31 outstanding requests, and Fusion I/O which also supports multiple outstanding requests.
Ah, okay.
The ones that we are experimenting with are the sort of low-tech SSDs, which have only one outstanding request.
That's making us easier to. Because if it's synchronous, if it's just everything sequential, that means. You know, you can do as much
serialize.
Serialize. Mm-hmm. That means that you can do as much as, you know, send as fast as you can and wait what happens, and you're gonna queue up by themselves. And right.
So
yeah.
I'm thinking for the experiments, like the common queue support for nodes will affect in the end result. If, let's say you have 4 concurrent requests which are supposed to be run, so the likelihood of hitting the same block, it's going to be like very, very small. And it wouldn't be that the same as issuing the 4 requests sequentially, with the same 4 random requests in a sequential fashion.
Issue is any sequence. Depends on what can be done internally. Can you parallelize those writes inside the SSD or not?
Well, the argument in the SanDisk paper is, well, they said they are not going to consider that for measuring the endurance, because it has little effect when you talk about random IO. The idea is to concentrate all those writes if they hit the same block in the SSD, and then just issue one write as opposed to 4 commands, say in this case. Right? But like I was saying, if the pattern is really random, then what is the chance that you're gonna kind of combine all of them in a single command?
Yeah, you probably you depends on whether you have page level remapping or not. Right. You could sort of just make, since you're going to be writing based on internal algorithm which is running inside the FTL, although these writes are to random locations, you might write with the same clean block, all of these 4 guys, because you never update in place. You always update in some clean block.
Or within the block if it has 3 pages.
If it has 3 pages, then within the
kind of block.
So I guess the easiest way for us to do, since we don't have all these sort of high-end interface, is just to space the request to some extent.
Yeah.
So we can control the rate.
Yeah, control the delay, right? And then you can
control
the interval between the requests, then you can do these things.
Mm-hmm. But I guess we should try with different delays, right? Because
the
next
ramp with different delays, you will have
exactly.
So I didn't want to draw all of those.
So basically, what you do is issue request without delay.
Yeah.
You can't. Then post processing.
Mm.
You have to know how many you want to issue. Mm. Say 10,000 requests.
Right.
And then you stop.
Mm. Right.
And then
the first question is, can you reproduce exactly the same graph? Right. So if you do the same experiment again, will it happen the exact same way? To make it happen exact same way, how much time do you have to wait? Or if you can ever make it happen exact same way,
That's the way. I think we can. This is pretty easy after first round when you gather.
Can we do this with the response times? I think so. Right?
Yeah.
It's the same thing.
It's the same thing.
Yeah.
But the reverse. Okay.
Yeah. So what I would suggest for you to do, Lewis, is to develop these ideas.
Right.
And you know, start doing some experiments where you can, you know, understand how the cleaning process actually changes the response time, and then you can start doing some of the some modeling stuff as well. Maybe you can start with doing sequential, right? And then you can move on to randomize. Maybe it will be a different kind of pattern than for both these cases. Maybe the throughputs will be better when you're doing sequential writes versus random.
Okay.
And can we actually perhaps infer some this the second cost in the cleaning time by looking at the curve, say this is the response time curve.
Mm-hmm.
We have like the best case, kind of the top of the curve. Well, if it's response time, it's going to be the bottom. Right? It's going to be a different
mm-hmm.
sample. And then we have the worst case, like when we know that there's cleaning going on.
Mm-hmm.
And then the difference should be something like the constant cost.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. In a way.
Yeah, that's right. So the difference would tell you how much exactly the erase operation cost.
That would be of the full merge, where you read an entire block.
Yeah.
It is divided.
The difference between the full merge and the switch merge. But the switch
merge should be somewhere in the middle, I guess.
The switch merge should be somewhere in the middle. Full merge should be all the way at the bottom here. And no cleaning would be up here.
It's our best case.
Yeah.
Okay.
So yeah,
when you don't even have to wait for an erasure, right?
Yes,
but one thing, you know,
before you start, let me say that let's say this is the curve with random writes. Maybe with sequential writes we have something like
mm-hmm.
this. Because at the lowest point, you're only paying for switch merges, which are more efficient than full merges, which is probably what is happening here.
But in the switch merges, don't you erase the block in the background?
You might have to erase it in synchronously, just like in this case.
Right, because you have to wait.
You had to wait for clean blocks
to
become available.
Okay. So that means that you will attend the next request just when you have this number, this threshold of free blocks. That's okay.
Well, that's what this guy is
doing. So what way do you actually can issue requests? Issue IO requests. Within your experiments, you're going to change. I mean, this is going to be very sensitive to that.
Mm-hmm.
And you can, you know, suppose that you take the zero time to send a request. I mean, if the number of requests, then
mm-hmm.
it actually definitely not going to be the case. So, at fastest rate, and how many requests can you have?
Well, we have only one request at a time in the SSD, and for that request to complete, you have to wait for the SSD to respond to that request before you can actually send the next request to the SSD.
Oh, that's synchronous.
The devices that we have,
okay.
We are forced to do synchronous IO.
Okay.
From an operating system standpoint, even if, let's say, the application issues async, it will go and become sync once it gets to the device driver.
Oh, okay.
Controller can't have only one request.
Okay, so it's synchronous.
It's synchronous.
That's the line speed.
Yeah. At the point we see that is this D2C point, there is always synchronous. You can have multiple at the same time.
So, Lewis, you were saying something earlier. I cut you off.
No, that was my
okay.
That you know the cleaning could be in the background, but it's true that you keep the requests stopped while you are doing integration and that's first.
So to recap that. I think the one thing is to have something like this. Nice, at least to see if we can have an issue here. And if we do have this, we need to redesign the request size experiment
mm-hmm.
so that we don't
you know, get into this area.
Yeah.
I have to
what request size is that?
You do increasing the request size and you look at
writing
performance. Because your experiments didn't really consider was, you know, if there is an effect of this, and that will explain the drop, right? And if without that, probably the right curve would be much better. And hopefully it will be much better. That will help us to model, you know, what are we going to do with the model. So if we do observe this, we have to really think what exactly how we're going to do.
Completely true. Yeah. This will change quite a few things from our previous class. So, Louis, do you have any new graphs for us to see?
Yeah, actually I was thinking that because it's probably messed up because these times are taken from the application. So, actually didn't do the D2C, the D2C timing, but I guess I can do that later. But, well, anyway, so this graph is just the memorized. Write into the same block 10,000 times. So
you don't have two different levels that you had before.
No, because in this case it's 2 megabytes request, which is apparently it's a lot different than having 4K.
Okay.
The one that I sent before was 4K.
4K.
That actually looks more.
And this 2 megabytes, is it the block size of the memorite? Logical block size.
I don't remember.
2 megabyte aligned, 2 megabyte IO?
In this case, yes, exactly. I'm aligned in 2 megabytes.
Okay, and then you get a single line. What is the Y axis?
The Y axis is just the response time in seconds.
Milliseconds?
Yeah.
And so what is the, I can't really see from here, what is the number on the line?
20
milliseconds.
So it's a big write, so I guess it will take quite
some time. 20 milliseconds and you wrote 20 megabytes, correct?
2 megabytes.
Yeah. So the throughput you're getting is 2 times 50, which is 100 megabytes per second. That's your throughput.
Right.
Correct?
Exactly. Yeah.
100 megabytes per second of writes, and this is, and how long did you write this for? A long time.
How long is this? This is like.
How many? What is the number on the x-axis? What is the units on the x-axis?
On the x-axis, the number of requests. No, it's not time. The number of requests.
The number, the index of the request.
Yeah.
The index. Okay. So the last number up there is what?
10,000.
So 10,000 times 20 milliseconds is the duration of the
service.
So that's about 200 seconds.
Right. I think it's quite fast.
200 seconds, yeah. Now I'm just comparing it with these guys. They have throughput drop. Yeah. Might be interesting to see if you continue what happens. Do you get that sustained for, let's say, 5 minutes?
I did this for 100,000,
mm-hmm.
and it was pretty much the same.
100,000 would be times 2, times 10, which is
2,000 seconds.
200 seconds. No, 2,000 seconds.
Yeah. What are the request sizes that they use?
4K.
Isn't that's going to be totally different. I mean, you're talking about what?
Yeah,
2 megs.
No, but you still need to do cleaning, even with 2 megs.
Right.
You still need to do cleaning after a while.
That's true.
That's what I'm
wondering. And actually more efficient. I mean, the request is more efficient because they have more each time.
The cleaning is probably going to be more efficient because you're writing really large chunks and you're probably doing switch merges only.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why you probably don't see 2 levels.
I will have to do this in random. Is this random?
No, this to the same block,
We have to do random. So.
Mm.
So we'll probably have to redesign that a little bit sort of to match with that.
Mm.
So this is exactly the same experiment, just repeat it again to see if there was some change. It looks actually kind of the same.
Okay.
What else I have? I have the memorized for 4K 10,000 requests.
Okay.
Which looks something like this. So in the lower band there is less requests, right?
Mm-hmm.
These lines here.
The y axis again is latency.
It's exactly the same latency, and this is the number of requests.
Mm-hmm. And did you repeat this experiment again?
No, I didn't. But when I did the one that is 100,000 requests were exactly the same, so it will repeat. Will be mostly the same.
So it seems like there are distinct levels. I mean, there are, I see at least
four levels,
and it's interesting that they are very visible. That you have these four levels.
Yeah. You know, I guess I have to redo these experiments
with
the D2C because probably that would change a lot the graph. I have seen, in my experience, that change a lot the graphs.
That's true, yeah. I mean, this could be just with 10 and 20 milliseconds, it could be as simple as just the scheduling layer.
The scheduling layer, yeah. That's right.
I would also suggest, I would recommend not to do this until we figure out that. Because that is going to change everything.
Okay.
In terms of spacing the right point. And if we could repeat that, at least we know, not to issue this many requests per second. That means per second or per millisecond, let's stop for a while before.
Okay. We have the Samsung, which is mostly the same, but it has more bands.
But this is interesting that, so this, the previous one that you showed was what, Memorite?
Memorite.
With 4K? And
4K.
This is Samsung with 4K?
Yeah.
And what are the levels at, 20 and 10?
No, in this case it's different. This case is 10, 20, but you have something else here.
Yeah, but the prominent lines are at 10 and 20.
Yeah, yeah. It's
very surprising.
Well, there are more levels than the previous one.
There are two more levels.
Two more.
Yeah, 10 and 20, that sounds a little bit suspicious because, I would just look at the, wait for the D2C before looking at any further graphs because I don't want to cloud my my intuition at this point.
Yeah.
The question, I guess, is what could we deduce from these curves? I mean, if we
assume that they are correct,
rerun them and let's see if we can find some changes between two subsequent runs. If there's any information that we can infer from this graph, from this type of experiment.
Just writing to the same?
To the same address.
The same address again and again, yeah. So the motivation, what was the motivation, initial motivation?
Yeah, actually, I was trying to, so my thought was that, okay, so I guess the cleaning is the worst thing that could happen in the device, right? So that's the one that takes more the most. So my thinking was, let's try to write to the same block again and again and again. And in that, with this exercise, I stress the cleaning and see how that, how was the time.
Well, how does this stress the cleaning, though?
Because, well, I guess...
I mean, you need to walk through the process of what would happen given some model of the cleaning, right? So if we assume that the cleaning is threshold-based, which is if the number of clean blocks goes below a certain value, then I'm going to do cleaning. Then what is going to happen if I write the same block over and over again? What's going to happen is that I write to the first clean block, and then I write the same over and over again to the first clean block, and then once I fill that up, then I write to the next clean block.
Mm-hmm.
And I do exactly the same thing again, and I do that for all, not all, but until the point I reach the cleaning threshold. And then at that point, before I can write again, I have to reclaim the old, one of the blocks that I wrote to just now, or several of the blocks that I wrote to just now.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the blocks are actually contain invalid data completely. So what I can do is actually just an erase operation, which is perhaps equivalent to a switch merge. There is no merging here, but just an erase operation, right? So you erase. So here what we are looking at is the cost of an erase operation in some sense. Because the only thing that you need to do to clean is to erase blocks. You don't need to do any pointer movement, you don't need to copy any data. All you need to do is erase those blocks.
You have to update the pointer, right?
No, you don't. The updating of the pointer is anyway you need to do that because you're always writing to some new location. The only additional thing that you need to do.
So this is what I'm sort of modeling it as, right? Can I erase it?
Yes, yeah, I'm probably anything.
So you have the SSD space, right? And these are your original blocks. And let's say these are my current clean blocks. And so I choose this page within some block to overwrite. So I just write to the first clean block, right? It's the same block. And then I write to the next clean block. Then I so on till I fill up. And there are some, of course, the reserve clean blocks that should always be maintained as a reserve, right? So I fill this up. Then before I write once again, you know, this is my next request. Before I write this again, I have to reclaim one of these blocks. And these are perfect candidates for cleaning because they all have invalid pages. All of them have invalid pages, right? So all I need to do is erase. And once I do the erase, then I write this maybe to this first guy again and change the pointer, which changing pointer is always being done, right? Because you're never updating in place. You're always writing to a new location. So the only additional thing you do here is the erase operation. So this is one way to model it. It seems to make sense, but maybe something else is going on. But we do see multiple levels. I would like to see the D2C graph before we further discuss this.
Maybe this may reinforce, the D2C curve reinforces gap of largest difference that we see in the order, the random right curve. The calculator that comes in time.
Yeah. And since, do you have the block trees? Do you have to redo all these?
I have to redo it, but sorry for.
I would also probably ask you to do longer experiments, just to see if there are some changes after a certain period of time.
You mean like the same experiment, but
the same experiment but longer? Not 100,000, but more like, I don't know. So right now you have 10,000, right? Maybe 50,000, so we have at least 5 minutes. Long experiment because these guys have changes around 200 seconds into the experiment, and right now your entire duration is 200 seconds. It's extended by a factor of 2 or 3. Maybe we'll see something different than what we
I still sort of think that we should do random. Given that, and because you are always cleaning one block at a time, so the frequency for you to really do the erase is probably smaller, maybe. I'm not sure. As opposed to randomly widen the entire.
The frequency of cleaning will be slower.
Slower.
When you write to this, because your cleaning efficiency is really high.
Really high. Yeah. So that's what I'm saying. That probably you're gonna wait a long time before you see some kind of a negative effect of cleaning because the threshold. Available free block image.
Possibly.
Probably never can see it given the synchronous the time it takes for most, satisfying those requests. Probably never actually can see it. But if it's random, then probably can observe that behavior faster than.
Yeah, I'm also thinking about, because right now I'm doing these synchronous, but at the application level, right? So I have one outstanding request in the operating system. Any given time. So
you probably want to do async. Yes, because
I think async is going to be correct, the better thing to do.
Exactly.
Yeah, because at least the device will get stressed.
Exactly.
The maximum possible we can stress.
Yeah, because I'm thinking that while you return the response, probably the device has some time to do the registering.
Yeah.
But can you do async?
Hmm?
Can you do async?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, async at least to the operating system, because right now we also have sync inside the OS.
Right.
Which is going to just add more delay.
I thought we bypassed that.
I thought we did too, but now.
What do you mean?
But application to kernel context switch. Did you do that?
No,
I thought you were doing it inside the kernel.
No, I'm not doing exactly. I mean, it develops an additional interface to the kernel.
Mm-hmm.
But I am doing this in the user space with a character device. So I have to call this to write to this character device, which is the one that creates the request and send the request to the block layer quite directly.
And can you do async between the user level and the character device?
I guess, no, actually you cannot. The way I'm doing it is that the character device blocks till the request is done.
Well, then you have to issue multiple threads.
Yeah, exactly. Or rather change the character device.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think it will be important to have async requests inside the OS, I think.
Why is it important? I don't appreciate that. I mean, since we can only have one outstanding kernel request inside the device, right? That's
correct.
Why is that actually?
Because even inside the OS, if you sync, then you have you're introducing additional delay between issuing IO requests.
Oh, you want to have something ready there.
Yeah, you have to have something ready inside the device driver, so as soon as the device becomes ready, it's gone. Rather than having to wait until you reach, in this case, application level, and there is a additional context switch, and then issuing new requests.
In that case, just stick to the driver. Every time it's done, put something else.
Mm-hmm.
And something like that. It was like an interface so that we can say, well, from now on, every time you finish, issue another request until you're done with the number of requests.
One thing I can do is the following, right? Because there will be also some restrictions in terms of memory. I guess at some point you don't have more memory to allocate pages so you can write to the device. So what I can do is to write as long as I have space in memory to allocate new pages to write. Right. So I stress or...
Yeah, async is tricky because async you don't have time. And that depends on how many requests are going to issue, because you can't control how long you're going to observe and stop.
Right.
In that case, you can do async.
Right.
I guess the first thing we should do is sync, just see whether we can observe it.
Mm-hmm.
If we can observe it, you know, there's no point of discussion. That we can do it. If we can't, we have to do tricky things.
Mm-hmm.
Remember how async requests.
I agree. I think it's smarter to do it first with sync to see if we observe what we want to observe or what we expect to observe.
You mean in this experiment?
In this experiment,
yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And if sync does not help, then we go to async. Because async is going to be additional development, right? So
absolutely.
And even if you're doing sync inside the kernel, if you do sync inside the kernel rather than having to wait to user level,
right,
to issue the next IO operation, that's probably going to be useful. I thought that's what you were doing at some point. No? So you're always doing sync from user level applications.
Yeah, but with my own, device driver.
That was a context switch module.
Yeah, context switch, of course. But even inside the kernel, you will have context switch because this should be done
but
in
the
user level
context switch is much, much worse.
I would say that it's not quite different because inside the kernel you have to do a kernel thread anyway, and the kernel thread I think is
But you have to signal the user process to supply you the next block request, right?
But it's the same, right? In the kernel thread, you have to wait for a kernel thread till it has the next block to issue.
I'm not sure whether that's going to be the same thing.
I think it's the same thing. The only difference is the overhead in the mode switch. But the context switch would be the same if you do it at the user space.
I think we can do away with this by just not to really, you know, have someone issue a block request saying, I want to divide it this way. I want to, have 4 kilobytes request sent. And
so have a different sort of interface to the application.
Sort
of. And the device driver and the device you can say the device, well then you have to implement what Lewis calls its kernel thread, because then you need a process context to issue IO operations. You cannot issue IO operations from the interrupt handler. That's the only restriction. And
because the
context switching between user level application and interrupt handler versus interrupt handler and kernel thread, more or less the same, but there may be some advantages to switching into a kernel thread because at least the address space is the same.
Right.
Both are in kernel address space. You don't have to run instructions in user space, but I think practically they probably, the overheads are going to be very similar.
Yeah.
That would be my expectation.
Yeah. That's what I think.
Doing a kernel thread, I agree, may not buy you so much in the end if you're doing synchronous. But if you're doing async, then I guess again it's the same thing. Still the same thing as doing user or user level process of kernel thread. I think it's again going to be the same thing.
Also, so I guess the good thing of doing it in the kernel is that you can, because we're at the end of the request, we don't want anything with the data that the device returns or
we put in.
So exactly. So what we can do is to have a null end dial, right? And in that case, you don't have context switch. You just send the request, and you're done. You don't need to have the response back. And the times will be measured with the block tray, which is a totally different subsystem, right? So actually, in that way, there is some advantage of doing it inside the kernel, actually.
But you could do that in the character device as well, isn't it? I mean, even if you do.
Right now I'm doing that. What I'm doing is that I issue a request and block in some log that I create, and this log will be unlocked by the end IO of the request, right? Which make it synchronous.
I think this is something that you can think about it
I think we definitely should do it in asynchronous because of, you could have, what I was saying is that you return, right, and you wait for the application to be notified of the response,
and
the SSD could be doing some background cleaning and so on, so it would change the state, and I guess we don't want that, right?
Right. But if this is totally tied up very, inside kernel, it still can, issue async requests, right? Still sort of, the user request one time, and whenever it comes back, it just
inside the kernel, requests are asynchronous by default. To make it synchronous, you have to synchronize by yourself. So I don't know. I will think about that.
Okay. All right.
So, Lewis, have you made a note of the things that we discussed today?
Yeah.
The next set of experiments that you need to
do. I have the experiment that I have to do, but...
Okay.
But...
So Louis, do you have Ariel, do you have new things? I'm sorry. I just spaced out.
Okay. No, I think we touched many points that I took note.
Okay.
And I think this this idea of making this random experiment is kind of summarizes many aspects that I include in the writing, and we already touched them in the discussion. So
okay.
I'll check in on the list, and the only thing where maybe I can add is about the block state.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking of some list of attributes that we may want to identify per
mm-hmm.
block
mm-hmm.
and try to characterize a block by those attributes, right? So a possibility, this list is basically composed of some ID for the block, but
mm-hmm.
a logical ID. Well, every time we talk, it's logical thing.
Okay.
So the state set.
Mm-hmm.
So we can say that the block belongs to one category at a single time. And so the possible categories are free, dirty, slim, to be garbage collected, spare, or fail. Fail in the sense that it's never going to be used by
mm-hmm.
there. May not be useful at all for us, but we know
so
that
all these states are distinct. I mean, it's not collapsible.
They don't intersect at all. So
mm-hmm.
a block is either clean, it either contains valid pages and invalid, which is dirty. It's to be garbage collected, which means it's totally invalid pages, but
okay.
it's used, but it hasn't been kept in
like
clear.
That.
Yeah, something like that. Then there was the idea of percentage usage
mm-hmm.
In terms of valid pages. We can include this in terms of all the pages that are used in the block. Valid and invalid, but we can even further segregate into only those valid pages. So that's a percentage, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's, which will go in direct relation with the splitting time.
Mm-hmm.
I think this idea, and even the formula that's at the top,
mm-hmm.
resembles the formula for our base case of the read model.
Mm-hmm.
And this can even further explore it into multiple levels. This
mm-hmm.
kind of the baseline. We know that things may occur in parallel,
mm.
so this cleaning times may add up, may max sometimes, according to where the flash units are.
Mm.
I feel that will be the case. Then maybe the number of erasures per block, which may be a parameter that we want to use for the queue idea. Right?
Mm.
So that's going to determine which block is next candidate for the to be switched with another daily one, right? And the other component of this kind of model is, of course, the logical mapping for the flash translation table. So, which composed of three things, basically. And it's the range of LBAs in the address space, a block in the SSD, one of the block IDs, and a page offset within that block. So we can say that a range of LBAs are mapped at some point in time to a block,
mm.
and within this block to a certain offset.
Mm.
Let's say page 0.
So
one,
this is page level indirection. Page level.
Which would be page level.
Mm.
Yeah.
I have to go.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know.
So when are you guys meeting for the design model?
Perhaps Friday after the talk.
This week is pretty bad. Let's see next week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's okay. Yeah. I know.
But let me know because I.
Yeah.
By the way, I also was working on actually talked to Ariel about this. I was rethinking or trying to simplify the read model we have.
Mm-hmm.
So I did some changes, basically assuming that instead of having this omega operator,
mm-hmm.
Was trying to really capture where are the sums and where are the max. So we can simplify that.
Okay, we can talk about that maybe next week.
Yeah.
Okay.
Have something around, yeah.
Okay. Okay. Sure. Right. Well.
All right. Bye, Louis.
All right.
Yeah. Okay. So I think that's good. So I'm glad that we have some point of discussion at least for the right model.
Yeah.
Now, if you want to.
I'm just to see what's the result of that.
Yeah, this experiment.
And once that experiment is done, there's a considerable bit, got timey dependent results.
Yeah.
Which is very important.
That's right.
For
yeah.
us to figure out.
State independent.
The state independent, yeah. I'm not sure whether you guys done it. I have something to talk to you about.
Sure, yeah.
And something to
Yeah, no, just finishing talking this part.
Okay.
I'm going to be leaving in 2 seconds.